listeners, this is the Life's a Garden Dig It podcast, and if you're here, that means you love all things flora just like me. I'm your host, Sierra. I am a member of the Tennessee Beekeepers Society and an avid native pollinator gardener. I've been curating my own pollinator garden oasis for 5 years, and I've been involved with beekeeping in some capacity since I was around 12 years old, back in the late 1900s. Today's episode air date is October 28th, and that means we're in the fall season when gardens are mostly finished producing and we're starting to plan which seeds to sow for spring blooming. I thought it would be the perfect time to dig in, pun intended, to pollinator-friendly planting. So today's episode, To Be or Not To Be, is going to give you a broad overview of planting pollinator-friendly areas in your garden, who the pollinators are exactly, which plants are considered beneficial to pollinators, and finally, spoiler alert, we are going to talk about why not all bees are created equal. This episode is sponsored by the Native Plant Rescue Squad, a nonprofit organization located in Knoxville, Tennessee, whose purpose is conservation of native plants in our southeastern area. You can find out more about their efforts and buy plants from them at nativeplantrescuesquad.org. So when thinking about who the pollinators are in our garden, the first species that comes to mind is probably going to be the honeybee. And bees in general are absolute champs at pollination. But there are so many other species of animals, including avian and mammalian creatures, who are integral parts of plant pollination. Bats, butterflies, bees, birds, moths, wasps, and even flies are important to plant pollination. For instance, the pawpaw tree, which produces the United States' largest native edible fruit, is pollinated by beetles and flies. And because of their specific pollinator species, some people say that pawpaw flowers look and smell like rotting flesh. So an interesting trick to help pollinate the pawpaw tree, some folks hang old meat or fish from the pawpaw trees in mesh bags to attract the flies and beetles to do their job. The first thing you need to know about pollinator-friendly gardening, though, is that natives will always be king. Wherever you are in the world, your local native flora are 10 out of 10 times going to be the best suited plants for your garden, from an ecologically friendly standpoint, that is. To summarize an article by the Audubon Organization, natives have evolved with the land that they're located in, and they fit in perfect harmony with the ecology surrounding them. They don't require watering, so they save on water. Their roots are suited for the landscape, and they can help prevent flooding. They don't require much soil amending because they are adapted for the type of soil that's already available where they are. And they're also more beneficial to the wildlife of the area as well, meaning the pollinators in the area are biologically supposed to feed on these plants. They were created and evolved together and go hand in hand. That's not to say that pollinators won't feed on non-native plants. They do, and sometimes the non-native plants will outcompete the natives, like is the case with invasive Chinese privet. It's a very invasive but aromatic shrub that produces small white flowers, and bees absolutely love it. But it's not going to be as good for the bees as the comparable native white woodland aster or something similar. And allowing non-native invasive plants to grow can have negative effects on the surrounding ecosystem by drawing the pollinators away from natives who need to be pollinated to grow and benefit. So which plants are best for your area? That depends entirely on your hardiness zone and what type of area you're working. For backyard gardening, beautiful flowering plants give the color pop and bring in pollinating visitors that are pleasing to the eyes. This past summer, I had a flutter of around 20 to 30 fritillary butterflies outside my front window, and it was such a beautiful sight to see. For flowering plants in your pollinator garden, you might like Rudbeckia, known as Black-Eyed Susan, or Joe Pieweed, Blanket Flower, Wild Blue Phlox, Butterfly Milkweed, Swamp Milkweed, or Common Milkweed. Make sure, though, that you don't select tropical milkweed, as those can be bad for pretty much every type of butterfly around here. the Xerxes Society actually has some very informative articles about how parasites don't die back on the evergreen tropical milkweed, and they can cause monarch butterflies to have lower migration success. So we don't want that. If you're looking at trees or shrubs to complement your landscape, you might enjoy the before-mentioned pawpaw tree. That's a great one. Other key players are redbud tree, the flowering dogwood, serviceberry, or beautyberry. And it's also worth noting that I am in Grow Zone 7 myself in East Tennessee. And so if you're listening, you know, locally, these plants will be absolutely suited for your area as well if you're also in Grow Zone 7. But if you're, you know, somewhere elsewhere in the country, Grow Zone 9 or Grow Zone 4, these may not be suited for your area. So it's best to do a little research and, you know, select the perfect plants that grow in your specific zone. Wildflower.org is an extremely helpful website provided by the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center at the University of Texas at Austin. You can search by location for the most suitable plants in your area, and they offer a directory of organizations and conservancy groups near you as well. Moving into our last segment, I want to touch on the topic of bees. Most of the time, when we say bees, we focus on honeybees, and we think, you know, that's what we think of when we think of our most prolific pollinators. The Bee Conservancy reports that the United States is home to over 4,000 varieties of native bees, but did you know that the honeybee is not one of those? Honeybees are not native to the United States. They were brought over to America with European settlers, and the three that we usually buy and keep as beekeepers are the Carniolan, the Italian, or the Russian varieties. These bees have been commercialized and are the only types of bees that produce the honey that we buy in stores. They are majorly important to food pollination, and they pollinate about one in every three bites of food that we take, but they are oftentimes solely focused on when we discuss bee population decline. With honeybees, the decline is usually on the larger commercial beekeeping scale, and these are beekeepers that have, you know, 30, 40, 50 hives that are pollinating large agricultural areas. We tend to neglect discussing the decline of our native bee populations, which can affect humans just as much as the honeybees. Planting native wildflowers and keeping natural spaces natural, meaning no mowing, leaf gathering, or garden clearing, those things can help the native bee species thrive in their intended environment. Lots of native bees pollinate the grasses as well as flowers, and leaving natural spaces natural helps their plight. So that's a wrap on the info portion of this week's episode. I want to get into the question and answer portion before we close out. Ramping up to this week's episode, I've been reminding you listeners to send in questions you may have about pollinator-friendly planting, and I hope to have answered many of those questions as I spoke, but I want to directly address a few of these others now. Question number one, a listener asks, Sierra, I live in an apartment and don't have adequate space for the kind of plants I would really like to have. Are there any native pollinator-friendly plants I could keep in pots on my patio? This is an excellent question, and the short answer is yes. Some smaller plants can do well in containers. Those plants are going to be like lantana. That's a favorite of hummingbirds. Blanket flower, geranium, wild iris, or coreopsis. Those are really beautiful flowers that you can keep in smaller areas. The next question is, how do I know where to get native plants or seeds? Now, this can be a bit tricky to answer, as some commercial sellers aren't that trustworthy, and they will sell varieties that are non-native and or invasive. So you have to, you know, kind of do a little due diligence here. The best place to begin your search is going to be your local ag extension office, your wildlife resource agency in your state, or a plant conservancy group that you know about. Those will be usually in contact with reputable sellers, and they can lead you in the right direction. But some other helpful links are the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center at wildflower.org. It's a great site to just lose yourself perusing for hours. And then the U.S. Forest Service has their site at fs.usda.gov. That's a really informative website as well. It's government ran, so I trust it a little more than, you know, some regular .com. A final question asks, how do you know which plants will survive in your climate? The plant hardiness zone map is located on the USDA.gov website as well, and it can give you information based on the zip code you enter. And it's a pretty interactive map, and it's really, really accurate. So that just about wraps up our To Be or Not To Be episode of this week's podcast. I hope I have given you all a little more insight into the benefits of pollinator-friendly planting in your area and maybe even sparked an interest in gardening. Until next time, this is Sierra saying,
life's a garden, dig it.